Hi, I'm Rachel Hopkin and welcome to How Curious. I'm feeding a couple of my foster kittens, Button and Piecrust. Piecrust sometimes growls when he eats. It's adorable. I've been fostering rescue kittens for Norman Animal Welfare for a couple of years. Usually I keep the little darlings till they weigh 2 pounds when they're ready to be vaccinated and fixed, i.e. spayed or neutered, and put up for adoption here. However, sometime back, I was asked to bring my then charges in early because they'd been tagged for transport. What this meant, I learnt, was that they were going to be put on a flight loaded up with Oklahoma's rescue dogs and cats and flown to shelters in select other states, where their chances of finding a forever home and quickly were much higher. For Norman Animal Welfare, this is a regular occurrence. Every 6 weeks or so, the centre's staff start prepping the animals in the wee small hours of the morning to get them ready for the flight that's operated by the non-profit Dog Is My Co-Pilot. I went to see this happening a short while back.
Wow, this is quite the operation.
The main area of activity was a loading zone to the side of the building.
So the animals are all brought up here kind of one by one and then put in crates here?
Yes, and all the crates have to have blankets or towels in them. The live animal stickers are required. And then once they're in the crate, we will zip tie the door so that they can't escape once they're on the airplane. We had one, it was about three flights ago, I guess. It was in a crate like this. It chewed through the plastic.
Oh my gosh.
And got out on the plane.
Fortunately, it doesn't sound like you've had any bad things happen when that's happened.
No, we won't send any dogs that have behavior problems. They're friendly with people. They're friendly with other dogs.
And they're not given any kind of sedative or anything like that, are they?
No, not usually. If they do have real high anxiety, we might give them something. Obviously, she does not have high anxiety.
We're talking about a delightfully chilled out looking Labrador called Nellie.
She's very like that.
She just doesn't want to stand up.
Overseeing all of this is Kelly Robertson, who's been the manager of Norman Animal Welfare since 2022.
So when I very first started here, I knew that animals were transported, and I reached out to Dog as my co-pilot.
That's the nonprofit founded by animal-loving pilot and former surgeon Peter Rourke.
And I got in touch with their rescue flight coordinator, Lynette, and Lynette explained the whole process to me, told me that I had to find rescue partners that will accept my dogs, and the Dog as my co-pilot is the hub that gets them where they're going.
It is mostly dogs, but sometimes cats too.
Now we have multiple rescues that will take dogs off the planes as the plane lands in Colorado and goes on to Oregon and sometimes goes on to Washington State.
In fact, I learned animal rescue operations from all around Oklahoma are also working urgently and in myriad ways to transport animals out of state.
These shelters are all experiencing serious overcrowding.
Cynthia Armstrong is the Oklahoma Senior State Director for Humane World for Animals.
They start thinking about transport in an effort to prevent needless euthanasia of healthy adoptable animals. So it's a real mission. They're in combat mode all the time. It's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of lives that they're trying to save.
And it really is a lot of lives. University of Oklahoma professors, anthropologist Laurie Jervis and sociologist Laura Bray have been researching this subject for several years.
What we found in 2022 was over 26,000 shelter animals transported out of Oklahoma, which is 2 out of every 5, so nearly 40% of all shelter animals in the state. 94% were dogs, only 6% were cats, and they were going to 34 different states, and most of those were heading north.
I was so intrigued. I just assumed everywhere was in the same boat vis-a-vis rescue animals, i.e. that there are always far more needing homes than there are homes available, but evidently not. Miriam Kelly, who runs Desiderata Rescue out of Seminole, used to live in Washington State, one of the regular places that receives Oklahoma's animals, and she was emphatic.
It does not compare. I mean, almost every day there's like a litter of puppies dumped somewhere just within like a 20-mile radius of where I am. But if you ask people in the South here, they're completely oblivious. They think, oh no, this is normal. This is how it is everywhere. And it's like, no, it's not. It's not normal to find litters of puppies dumped on dirt roads to starve or to, you know, be eaten by coyotes. I mean, and that happens all over the state every single day. Yes, Washington is not perfect. like the northern states aren't perfect either, but it's just, you just can't compare it. It's like comparing apples to oranges.
It's perhaps not so unusual then that my fosters, Button and Pycrust, were found in a box filled with 20 or so felines of all different ages by the side of a road. So what's going on here that's leading to such a pressing overpopulation of cats and dogs? This isn't an easy question to answer, and there are definitely multiple factors involved. Dr. Tyler is the vet at Norman Animal Welfare, and she explained how Oklahoma's comparatively warm climate has an impact.
Obviously, in a much colder winter environment, the animals could potentially suffer hypothermia, and if not, the stress of the colder weather would make them more likely to become ill or have other unfortunate consequences.
In other words, animals born in the winter months in more northerly states have a lower survival rate. In addition, although Oklahoma's southerly location doesn't affect canine breeding seasons,
for cats, it's different. They come into season based on hours of daylight. So they need 10 hours of daylight to be in seasons. So the number of kittens that can be born within a season are going to be higher in the southern states.
The fact that Oklahoma is one of the more economically challenged states in the U.S. is also a factor. Here's Laura Bray again.
In places that are poorer, you do tend to have more human problems, so more situations where people have to surrender their animals for different reasons.
We also have an existing statute on the books.
Cynthia Armstrong again.
That requires confinement of all animals except dogs and cats.
Of course, it wouldn't be such an issue if these unconfined dogs and cats were spayed or neutered and therefore unable to reproduce. Everyone that spoke to me for this program pointed over and again to the importance of spay-neuter and the widespread lack of access to this resource. This included Annetta Kelly and Tara McCauley of the Lucky Paws Doghouse in Tishomingo. They're operating in a rural area where they're on the front line of this issue.
Spay and neuter is the only solution to all of this because really, before we got involved, there were dogs running everywhere. So that's why we're trying every Wednesday, if we don't have any appointments for the dogs in our rescue to get spayed or neutered, Annetta will take community dogs.
They have three standing appointments for spay-neuter operations per week with a vet in Ardmore, which is 45 minutes away.
I figured out, you know, a lot of people probably couldn't get their dogs spay and neuter because they have to drop them off at 8 o'clock in the morning and then pick them up between 2 and 3 in the afternoon. A lot of people at work can't take off to go and do that. I have people reach out to me from Denison, Texas. They'll bring their dogs up here so that I can take them to Ardmore.
Tara and Annetta have just indicated multiple issues that are prevalent across rural Oklahoma and beyond, including limited access to animal care resources, either because of lack of money or availability or both. Here's Laura Bray again.
A lot of the rural places throughout the state, it is like an animal service vacuum. So I think it's about a third of the 77 counties have no shelter at all. There might not be low-cost spay-neuter within hours of them. So some of these rural places, if they do have a shelter, they might not have money to spay and neuter the animals that come into their care. So they're releasing them back into the community without being spay or neutered. And so there's definitely a problem with the infrastructure.
One impression that I came away with, though,
this is Laura Jervis,
is that there can be sort of cultures of spay and neuter, more or less spay or neuter, yeah. And that there are parts of the country that have luckily and through a lot of work instituted a general expectation among the public that we are going to fix our animals. And I don't think as much of that's really happened here. Like, I don't think we're quite there. But again, what's responsible for that? You know, is it education? Is it money? Is it culture? Like, that's part of what we're trying to tease through ourselves.
A number of people who spoke with me for this program told me they'd encountered resistance to the idea of spay-neuter coming particularly from men. However, Kim Schlittler, who ran a spay-neuter assistance program in central Oklahoma for nearly 2 decades, saw a change in this regard over the years it was in operation.
Originally, it was application-based, and almost all the applications came from women. And I could see a shift over the years that more men were applying. So that was very encouraging to me.
Have you any idea what was bringing about that shift?
I don't. Maybe they just realize that I've got a female cat and it keeps screaming every time it goes into heat, or the cat's spraying all over the place, or the dog's getting a bit aggressive, or I have male dogs trying to get to my female dog in heat in the backyard. Maybe I should do something about that.
There are indeed multiple advantages to spaying and neutering, including behavioral ones. And there are strong medical pluses too, as Dr. Tyler laid out for me.
So when an animal is spayed, we take the ovaries and the uterus. And when an animal is neutered, we remove the testicles. So any of the diseases that would affect those organs, those problems are eliminated. So we're talking about ovarian cysts, ovarian tumors, uterine cancer, uterine infections, testicular tumors, prostatic diseases.
For anyone ready to get their animals spayed or neutered, then comes the issue of finding a place to do it at an affordable cost, or even for free, if you're lucky enough to live within a municipality with a shelter that offers this. For example, Norman Animal Welfare makes this service available to low-income residents of the city. Kim Schlittler has compiled a great resource in this regard.
Now that I'm retired, one of the things I always wanted to do was put together a list of spay-neuter clinics in Oklahoma.
She's documented over 50.
That includes one in Arkansas, one in Texas. If there's not anything in their county, look for something close to their counties. They're going to have to travel.
There's a link to this document on the episode webpage. Search for KGOU and How Curious. The waiting lists at some of these places can be long, so it's best to apply as soon as possible. During the course of making this program, I happened to meet two people who'd recently acquired a dog, both from rather sketchy-sounding breeders rather than a shelter. I asked Kelly Robertson if intentional breeding was compounding the overpopulation issue here.
If there wasn't that, we wouldn't have the problem that we have.
Of course, not all breeders are created equal. Kelly highlighted as problematic those who see it as a means to make a quick buck.
They see a fad or a trending type breed of dog that people are willing to pay high prices for, and they just think in their head, I'm going to get me a female and breed or have a litter of puppies. And those are some of the most dangerous ones, because these dogs are not, they're purebred dogs, but they're not well-bred dogs. So they end up with a lot of health issues, and a lot of times those dogs will end up in shelters.
I think not having puppy selling pet stores in places where you already have overcrowding is very important.
Cynthia Armstrong, she told me that Petland is a puppy selling pet store chain.
Recently, we had a Petland franchisee move into the state and open a store in Tulsa and the other in Oklahoma City. And that is because the city where he was operating in Illinois passed a municipal ordinance banning puppy selling pet stores. So he moved. So yes, that contributes.
I mean, to really get an overpopulated companion animal population under control, you've got to hit it really hard.
Anthropologist Laurie Jervis again.
Places that have got it under control, it can't be a half effort. I mean, it has to be a full throttle effort, and you got to have some money behind that. And philanthropy can come in too. It doesn't just all have to be government.
This is what happened in Vernita, Oklahoma, starting in 2014 when Kay Stout took charge of the city's new shelter.
It's a beautiful $1.7 million building, and I was told that people were waiting to adopt, and so when we opened the doors, then they would flock in and everything would be adopted and kumbaya. And shortly after we opened, I had all 50 kennels full and nobody was coming in to adopt. So I looked at it from a very business point of view. I came from the corporate world. I raised too much corn and nobody wants my corn. So we had too much.
Kay knew about adoptable animal transports and was put in touch with a gentleman named Bob at the Dumb Friends League in Colorado.
And then I called him and Bob said, we don't take from shelters. I said, well, you're going to take from mine. And he said, okay, I'll give you three chances.
With that tentative go-ahead, Kay reached out to two philanthropic families active in the area for help in moving the animals.
We sent 6,700 Oklahoma dogs to Colorado. But eventually I looked around and went, wait a minute, we're not filling our kennels anymore because we were shoving them out so fast. And we were doing spay-neuter. We got a Pets for Life program.
Pets for Life is a humane world for animals program, which includes the provision of community-wide veterinary care and pet supplies.
That changed everything, because Pets for Life meant if you lived in the town and it barked or meowed, we'd fix it. So now you don't have the dogs coming into the shelter. And so we started bringing in animals from rescues and shelters throughout Oklahoma.
As communities elsewhere across Oklahoma continue to struggle, animal transport provides a literal lifeline. It's not without criticisms, one of which is that it leaves the sending shelters vulnerable should their out-of-state partners have to reduce or end their receiving capacity for whatever reason. In the meantime, though, it can offer, in the words of Kelly Robertson, a safety net that allows staff to make thoughtful decisions, not desperate ones.
Goodbye, puppies. Goodbye, kitties.
As I join the Norman Animal Welfare staff to cheer off a flight full of their animals, the sense of relief was almost palpable.
Woohoo! Yay!
The two Oklahoma rescues that won't be leaving here anytime soon are Button and Piecrust, my two little former fosters. I simply became too attached and decided to adopt them. They joined Mushroom, my first foster fail, and another Oklahoma rescue, plus Figlet, who hails from Ohio. They make for a very happy quartet. Thanks to them and to all of the contributors to this episode, including the many whose voices we didn't hear. I put a complete list of credits, plus various resources relating to today's show on our webpage. Search for KGOU and How Curious. How Curious is a KGOU public radio production. The managing editor is Logan Layden, David Gray composed our theme music, and I'm Rachel Hopkin. As ever, if you have an idea for a future episode, please drop us a line at curious@kgou.org.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.